get your toe. Believe me. There are ways, dude. You don't want to know about it. Believe me.
Until
I get your toe by 3 o'clock this afternoon with nail polish. I'm going to damage your arm.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Okay, man. Oh, my God. This is what's wrong with the day. You don't let me sit there. You're not learning from mom. I'll cook with you for the recipe.
Serious. I just sharted. I don't know what that means. I tried hard and she came out. I just sharted.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, good. Because I just queefed big time.
What up? Welcome back to Uncle Rod's Story Corner. Hope you're feeling good. Hope you're looking good. Hope you're smelling good. It's a very special episode to me. This is going to be the final season of episode one. I'm sorry, season one, not episode one. The fuck am I talking about? Yeah, this is going to be the last episode of season one, man. Today, July 25th, 2021, is the 1 year anniversary of me releasing the first episode of the podcast, man. And it's been an absolutely amazing time. And I want to send a thank you to all my guests, all my listeners, all the people who ever told me that I should start my own podcast. This podcast is growing huge, especially with the cross-promotion with the Roy's Job Fair podcast that I do with Roy Wood Jr. and the gang, man. And so I want to send a shout out to everybody from Roy's Job Fair also. And I just want to let all the listeners around the world know that I really appreciate it. The podcast is up to 31 countries at the time it's recorded, man. And that feels good. So to close out season one, doing part two of my episode with my man, a co-host from Roy's Job Fair, Ralph Cooper III. And just like last time, it just kind of picks up, man. Me and Ralph talked for a couple hours that day, man. And like, every time we started to wind down and we thought the podcast was about to end, it just ran into just more conversation and more stories, man. It was so much fun. Like, Ralph was just so easy to talk to, man. It was a damn good time. So please stay tuned for the season finale. Not series finale and not episode finale. Season one finale. Uncle Rod Story Corner. Ralph Cooper III. Holla back.
Orange Jubilee, man. Orange Jubilee, Mad Dog 2020. There was this girl, Spelman chick. There's a Spelman chick I was talking to, and I ain't gonna talk bad about her. But generally speaking, fuck Spelman. you know what I'm saying? Everybody's lying to you people. Everybody be lying to you. They tell you to go to AUC to talk to girls from Spelman. Fuck that. If you go to damn AUC, you talk to goddamn girls, motherfucking Clark Atlanta University and Morris fucking Brown and the goddamn Fashion Institute at Phipps. Don't waste your time there fucking Spelman. Fuck that. I'm sorry. That was a personal moment. I had to get that out. They'd be fine, but it ain't worth it. It ain't worth it. It's a whole campus of not worth it.
This was Ralph Cooper's U.S. News World and Report College Rankings.
College review. I just gave it to you. Yeah. Damn, Spelman girl, man. She had me mad upset. So upset. She had me super upset. And I don't even remember what I was upset over. But my RA, being a brilliant, brilliant Florida man that he was and is, was like, man, you know what? You having girl problems like that, you need to drink. Well, I ain't never drank nothing before, man. I wouldn't even know what to go to the store to get. Yo, you know how you got them little campus square refrigerators in your room?
Right.
Yo, my man broke that shit out. And you heard the angels sing. He had like 6 or 7 colors of fucking Mad Dog 2020 in that joint. He had the hot joint, the purple shit, the orange joint. He had all the flavor. And the extra new joints that like had the ginseng and ginkgo biloba in it. Because apparently when you get drunk, you need these natural elements in this shitty alcohol. So, yo, I'm just saying. I took the Orange Jubilee, which had ginseng, and it was a tall joint. So it was a tall joint. And so me and my homie from Chicago, man, we went downstairs, sat on the steps of the dorm, drank the whole bottle of Orange Jubilee, might have smoked like 4 or 5 BDs. I remember drinking and finishing the Orange Jubilee and looking up at my man and being like, man, I waited 4 years of high school before I started drinking. And I didn't drink this whole bottle of this fucking Mad Dog shit. And I'm not drunk. Fuck drinking. This is the stupidest activity known to man. I don't know why people drink. It's important to note that my dorm, I stayed on the 3rd floor of my dorm. We are sitting on the 1st floor. And I'm sitting on the steps outside. I climbed the first set of steps. I'm fine. I climbed the 2nd set of steps. Man, I am awful hot all of a sudden. Why am I sweating? I get to the 3rd floor. I open the door, and it was like a Mobius strip. Like, I watched the room just start turning. I crawled past 4 doors to get to my bed. Threw up on the floor and went to sleep next to my bed. And from that moment forward, it was like, okay, it's catch up time. Let's go. This is what drinking does to you. We have learned. Now we must start and go through the different alcohols to figure it all out. And that's where it started. I had to stop drinking, man. I had to stop. Drinking, I fell in love with all the wrong shit, like, bruh. Mad Dog. I went from Mad Dog to Martell, from Martell to Hennessy, from Hennessy to vodka, and then from vodka, I landed on mezcal and tequila, and I've stayed there ever since. Mezcal, tequila, Japanese whiskey, and whiskey. Those are my areas, that's where I'm at.
I want to try that Japanese whiskey, man, because I like whiskey. I need to try that Japanese whiskey up,
man. How do I say this? I'm not bragging. I'm gonna tell you that in short, I'm a trophy husband. Even though I have graduated from Morehouse and my wife has graduated from Howard, everything that she has done from Howard has eclipsed anything that my little pillin' ass done in my life of Morehouse. And I'm fortunate, man. We're living very good. We doing all right, man. We ain't hurting at all. And my wife turned me on to the fucking Hibiki. My man's actually done a Morehouse. I'm looking onto it, but we went up here to the damn store. It's crazy. Cigarettes in New Jersey are more expensive. Alcohol is cheaper than it was in Virginia. So, man, I could take you to the damn store right around the corner right now and grab you a nice thing of Hibiki for like $40.
Hell yeah.
Then you ain't gonna be able to drink it all in one sitting, bro. That damn Hibiki, Suntory. Oh, bro. Hibiki and Suntory change a life.
Suntory is when I got there, my
that's
eye
some good fucking whiskey.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we can take care of that. We can take care of that. I'll figure it out. When I make you your drunk squirrel shirt, we'll figure out a way to smuggle that shit in. Jake, set it down. That's it right there. Yeah. Just don't shake the T-shirt. Don't shake the T-shirt.
Right. A T-shirt is very fragile. Be careful with it.
It's a fragile t-shirt. I mean, you gotta be careful.
Don't break that shirt.
Don't break the fucking shirt, man. Don't break the shirt. Fuck that.
Oh, God.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Tell the people where they can find you online, bro.
Y'all can find me on my Instagram page, RCProAm31. I don't do any of the viral video shit I'm supposed to fucking do. You can find me on Twitter. I'm RCooperIII on there too, where I mainly retweet motherfuckers who are way funnier than I am. And every once in a while, I'll make a comment. Every once in a while, I'll make a comment. But for the most part on Twitter, I'm socially dick riding. I have no problem admitting that. I retweet the shit out of your shit. I retweet the shit out of the homie Gordon Baker Bones, Sarome Russell, motherfucking Roy, Roy's Job Fair, shameless plug. You can find me on that bitch. Hell yeah. That's my latest job, so to speak. That's something else I can say, man. All y'all motherfuckers out there complaining about y'all job, what you doing and shit, don't say that shit to me, nigga. Don't come to me complaining about your fucking job and shit. I don't want to hear it. This little bitty piddling job that I may apparently have to some of you of being honored of working with Roy and Rod on Roy's Job Fair. Honestly, at this point, might be the best job I've ever had in my motherfucking life. I enjoy it. I love it. I really don't want to go back to working for anybody that I want to punch in the face ever again. Straight up. I just don't. I don't want to go back to anybody's office and deal with a Karen. I don't want to go back to an office and deal with a hotep motherfucker. I don't even want to go back to an office and deal with that mean ass churchy lady that owns all the office supplies and won't let you get nothing until you show her that you done read about Lot's wife in the fucking Old Testament. I don't want none of that shit, son. I am good. I don't want another job that y'all are going to judge me poorly because I can't pass a marijuana piss test ever again in my entire life. Nothing. I don't want it. I'm good. No, nothing made me happier. No, nothing made me happier than all this legalization shit. You know that you can work for Amazon now and be a certified pothead?
Hey, that's wild.
I don't know what greater equality there is in life.
Yeah, because like, that's the only thing that fucks up a piss test. It's the weed. That's pretty much what everybody's worried about.
do you know how many tactics I have employed to pass piss tests over the past 30 plus years of my personal employment? I have used baby piss and hand warmers. I passed the test and shit, but I was only gonna pass it one time. Like, just hell no, man. I am openly applying for jobs now and there. So how do you, I love how they ask you to in the interview. How do you handle stress? I live in New Jersey. It is legal than a motherfucker here for me to smoke a joint as soon as I walk out your bum ass job. So if you ask me, yeah, I smoke weed. So I got to deal with you, Bill and Karen. Next question. Fuck that shit. I'm telling you, B, it's a renaissance time to go and get a job. That's all I'm telling people. It's a renaissance time. Get high as shit and go to your next interview. So they have to ask you in the interview, did you smoke weed before you came here? Yes. I was stressed out as fuck. I could have got drunk, but I figured that y'all didn't want to see me drunk in the interview. So...
I 100% support that.
I'm just saying, homie. I mean, and I ain't gonna get too far. Like, you can, you know, cut and deal with however you want to. I don't care what you keep or what you keep, because I know what she hearing is gonna be the truth. But like, I love JG, man. She a wonderful sister, man. She's a good girl.
She's,
man,
awesome.
It's almost impossible for me to believe that she is as innocent as she is. Like, it is amazing levels of innocence. And when we start talking about what you should do as an HR person, I hate the fact that she's dead right every time. Like, she does. She makes the dead right HR call every time. Like, every time. She's right. And it's a hard HR decision that she makes. which makes me believe more and more that in this new corporate world, I think I need to start working in HR, man. I need to.
Listen, so you can help people get some sleep side.
Let some shit. I'm letting everything slide. You fucking kidding me?
Like, you want to be the cool teacher of the HR world?
I want to be that cool HR dude. I want to be the cool HR guy who pass all the tests too. Like, you know, because you got to pass a shit ton of tests to work in HR. I'm gonna pass all the tests, and I'm still giving out ass shit advice, like horrible fucking advice. Like, hey man, you know you ain't really got to retire to use that 401k, bro. You can withdraw that shit. They can't even charge your bitch ass for it, nigga. You know you want that $1,000 bond. You seen that $2,000 bond. You seen that shit. Man, go ahead and use your benefits, bro. Claim mental health on that shit and get yours, bro.
Well, folks, get coming yours. To a job near you, Ralph Cooper III, head of HR.
HR.
He hooking it HR. Up like a nigga at Subway giving out free cookies.
Or you smoked a little weed? You made it through the interviews? Hey, look, man, this is what we're going to do. This first test, I'm going to let that shit pass off. But, like, if you ever show up to work smelling like weed, or I see you doing the nod pass off when you're supposed to be paying attention and shit, I'm going to have to hit you off on a test, bro.
Oh, God. Well,
HR, bro.
Appreciate you coming on the show, big dog.
Hey, man, it was my. I didn't even feel like we taped the show. I don't even know what the fuck just happened. I feel like this is more along the lines of a conversation that needed to happen a long time ago, man. I am, be honest. I'm gonna say this, and I'll let you go home. When they first, I listened to the podcast just as a regular listener before. I ever met and had the honor of meeting Roy and JG, man. I still ain't met JG like that. I only met Roy. And I was listening to the show for shit, I don't know, at least a month and a half, a couple months before I ever met the dude. So when you started coming on and talking about dogs and shit, you already had me, bro. I was done. I was like, this nigga here. Like, I'm, you know, in the most manly way possible, I've been in love with your ass from the first time I've heard you, bro. I've been, call it me being high, but once we started doing this, once they tried to put me into the poll, they told me, yeah, you got to go and follow everybody on the show. I mistakenly followed the black guy who tips Rod. And I was following him, but I was listening to the shit you were saying on the show, and I was like, man, these don't sound like the same two niggas, man. Like, I don't know. I'm not really feeling this shit. And so there's the show where we interviewed this kid who was out in San Francisco. My first show that I listened to. And I didn't even get to meet you then because I wanted to meet you off the grip. Mm. But they were so I don't know if you remember, man, but the very first show that we taped together, you started talking about Batman, whether or not Batman eats pussy.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of full disclosure, I have been following you on Twitter talking about the shit. You and Gordon Baker Bone have been talking about the shit all fucking day. And I'm reading the shit. I hadn't responded, I hadn't said anything. But I'm dying. Like, I'm running around out telling my wife, like, that. See, I done told you for years. That's why I'm a villain. Ain't no question on whether that villain eats pussy. You got to worry about heroes eating pussy? That's right, that shit. Fuck heroes and fuck DJ Khaled. Fuck both of them motherfuckers. Man. Shit. So, when we fast forward, you start saying, all right, Roy, so this week, man, what we're going to talk about is DC Comics. If I don't know if you could have seen me in the camera. I was literally like, oh my god, and like I'm like all the fanboy in me, Rod, like real talk, all the fanboy in me was flipping the fuck out. I was losing my shit. I was like even if you go back and look at, I'm in the background like the whole time you're talking, I'm just like, yes,
yeah, it's
like,
yes, getting gross.
Yes. Oh son, I was feeling it. I was like yo. And to be real, man, from that first show forward, I was like, yeah, anything I got to do with Rod, I'm in, man. I felt like I was completing sentences with you and shit. I ain't even really met you and smoked with you like that yet. I was completing sentences. I was like, man, I fuck with this dude hella hard. and you started breaking down the Batman shit, and you was talking canon, bro. I was like, this dude is, yo, he's giving it to you motherfuckers right now. Y'all don't even know. Like, he is giving it to y'all right now. Like, he is telling y'all the motherfucking truth. Like, y'all don't, like, man, you all know, man. You had me from day one, bro. I was like, this motherfucker started talking about the Black Batman and shit. And, like, you know, I'm used to being nerded out of my circles and shit. These niggas don't like me. These niggas hate me coming around. I'm like Google without the fucking Fox News shit. Like, I can do that shit all day. I'm with it. I can give you the right information, motherfucker. I'm good at that shit. But, like, yeah, man, me and you and doing this, man, it was like, I keep telling people, man, you know, shit, I ain't gonna, you know, my wife, we're doing good, man, but it ain't been totally sweet. And if nothing else, man, this shit is, I've been saying it for a while, man, and I needed a win. This shit is a win.
Right.
This shit is a win. This shit is a win. I this shit is a win. I don't even want to start talking to you about how wild it was to be up in fucking Connecticut this weekend. And motherfuckers, you telling that you do comedy, and these motherfuckers pull out their iPad and they shit right in front of you and pull that shit up and be like, oh, that's you?
Right.
Oh, okay, that's you. And then start playing the shit. I'm still not built for that shit, bro. It's surreal. Like, it's still surreal, man. It's surreal. Like, you know, and it leads to, we could talk offline or whatever you're ready, but I ain't even tripping, but, you know, it leads to a conversation. Like, how are you as a comic even using or dealing with this shit? Because, like, for me, I've been close before, if that makes sense. Kevin Hart's people basically came up from Heart of the City in my room in D.C. one
day.
That's a super true story, and I even get, if he'll do it, he probably will, but Pookie Wigginton is the guy who's in charge. He's Kevin Hart's business manager.
Right.
He happened to come to our room. We had a pro night, and it was an open mic for pros, basically. He came to the room, and this motherfucking grown-ass man, Pookie, gonna come up to me and tell me and my cousin, don't tell anybody he's there. To which me and my cousin was like, why are we going to tell motherfuckers that a dude named Pookie is in the house?
Who are you?
What the fuck do we look like? Who the fuck are you? Like, you don't even, like, this dude, and he literally, like, and now that I know who he was, I understand why he came at us the way he did, but, like, he was, you know, he was real humble, but he still was chest out, like, right. You know.
He didn't introduce himself first. He was just like, don't tell people I'm here. Yeah, no, he didn't introduce himself. Like, well, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, he buried the lead like a motherfucker. He buried the lead, right? Hey, look, man, I've heard a lot about y'all. This is how he came with us. He said, look, man, I've heard a lot about y'all's room, man. What you two brothers is doing is incredible, man. You two brothers running a comedy room, man. You know, it's a good thing, man. I happen to run a comedy room out in Los Angeles. You know, it's a small thing, you know, but, you know, it's led to some good things happening in my life and stuff, man. So I just wanted to come out here and check what you brothers is doing, man. You know what I'm saying? My name is Pookie. You know what I'm saying? Nice to meet you. And me and my cousin, you know, we Southern boys, man. We, you know, we shook his hand. We looked at him. All right, that's what's up. All right, nice to meet you and shit. Y'all be sitting over here in the corner, man. You know, I just, you know, I don't really want nobody to know I'm here. Just, you know, man, I'm just here. I'm just trying to celebrate you brothers. All right, man, that's cool. That nigga walk off. We both look at each other like, yo, who the fuck was that nigga? Who's this short motherfucker walking up to us telling his name is Pookie and not to tell nobody he's here? Like, why?
The only famous Pookie is Chris Rock.
Right, that's it. You know what I'm saying? And we ain't selling no kind of cocaine in this bitch. So who the fuck is this nigga walking in this motherfucker? And this is all fucking true. You're probably the first person we really get to tell it to, but I'm telling it to. The show goes on, and this dude gets up on stage, and fuck it, I don't care if you mute his name or not, his name is Die Bogget, and Die is a DC nigga, but he moved out to fucking LA trying to be a star and shit. It didn't work. So he is on stage eating it. Like, if there is ever a comic in a moment eating all the gummy and macaroni dicks, he is just gobbling dick on stage. Like, it is so bad. Like, it is bad. And in the, like, I gave him the light, you know what I'm saying? Like, so he knew he had like a minute or so left. And when he sees the light, because he's struggling, like, he is literally like gasping for that. Like, just 9.5 inch cock, 3 inch out in his mouth on stage, like just mad. He looks up and goes, "Oh shit. Hey, comics, yo, cool, you done it again. I don't believe this shit. How do we got through half the show? Yo, we got a legend in the motherfucking house, man. Yo, that's Pookie Wigginton. That's the motherfucking dude that started Chocolate Sundays out in L.A. Yo, he's fucking Kevin Hart's business manager and shit. This the dude that fucking discovered Kevin Hart and the Paper Cup Boys and the Ray Cup Boys. Yada, 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 yada." In that moment, me and my cousin is in the booth. I'm about to go back up on stage to rescue this bum motherfucker. But you just told everybody that Kevin Hart's business manager is sitting in the fucking room. And so, like, all of a sudden, all the comics are like, and like I told you, we had a call. You had to email us. You couldn't just show up
right, and
get on. But everybody would come to these pro nights. And so the room is filled with first-timers, 3 year, 5 year, 15 years. All of a sudden, all these comics are rushing me on one side of the room. Like, Coop, you got to put me on. Coop, you got to put me on. Coop, please put me on. Please put me on. Coop, you got to put me on. You got to put me on. The other half, who are like, fuck you anyway. I'm just at your room. I don't like you, nigga. They just literally rush Pookie.
Right.
So this dude, now he looks up at his table, and there's like 30, 40 fucking comics surrounding this dude, giving him business cards, trying to throw jokes at this dude. And he's literally like, ah. So my cousin and I run and grab, you know, those stanchions that you use when people are in line out in front of the club. We run and grab stanchions, and we put the stanchions, we back the people off from where he's sitting and put the stanchions around him. So there's at least 2 feet between him and the table. And
give
he's
him a
still
VIP section.
Yeah. Like, you know, and this is in the middle of the fucking show, Rod. Like, this is in the middle. Like, it was fucking nuts. And so we put the thing up around him, and then he was like, man, what do we do about everybody asking us for stage time? I said, man, give me the fucking mic. I jump back up on stage, and I say, yo, look, yo, calm the fuck down. First of all, this is real simple, all right? If your punk ass didn't sign up, if we didn't send you an email saying that your punk ass is supposed to be on stage in the next couple minutes, you're not getting up. It's just that fucking simple. We've got a goddamn list. We have people who are coming to be on the show tonight, and I ain't bumping nobody or anybody else so that y'all can perform for this dude that we didn't know was here 10 minutes ago. So, y'all got a choice. We're going to chill out for about 5 minutes so the room settles back down, and then I'm going to make a comic call, and the comics that are left can meet me out back. We will discuss time, and then we will finish the fucking night. But if you all think that I'm just about to sit up here and force this man to watch I don't know how many hours of bullshit comedy so you all can feel like you done some shit, y'all got me fucked up. And, like, you know, niggas was real mad at me and shit, and you know, mad at my cousin for barking shit off. The end of the night, Pookie come back up to us. He basically was like, I have never seen anything like that before in my life. I don't even know how to put that into words, what you all did. He was like, yo, that shit was inspiring and shit. And he was like, trust and believe, I'm never going to forget what I saw tonight. He was like, y'all don't know. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Like, I just got something in my head. So the easy, quick cleanup is like weeks later. I mean, he talked to me. He called me. I got to talk to some of the Red Cup boys and all that kind of stuff. Like, he was showing me he was legit. He gave me some excellent comedy advice as far as running a room and all that kind of shit was concerned. And, you know, he was a good dude, but then, like, you know, like anything else, it dropped off after a couple months.
All right.
About a year or so passes, and at this point, I'm working for the Chinese folks. I had to shut down my room because news was so fucking crazy that I couldn't do both anymore. I couldn't run the room
right, and
be committed to the job. So I had to drop the room. And, you know, the mailing list, I was just still growing strong, but I'm not checking any of that shit. April 1st, I get a call from a dude on some local shit. Me and this white boy hated each other. He ran some rooms, and I, like, fuck you, I don't like you. He was like, well, fuck you, I don't like you. And we kept it funky like that, like, fuck you, nigga, I don't fuck you. So imagine my surprise on April 1st, this dude gonna call me, talk about some, yeah, man, I'm actually calling on behalf of Comedy Central and Kevin Hart because they want to do this show in D.C., and they want you to host it. And I hung up on his bitch ass. Like, yeah, all right, motherfucker. Yeah, okay. Kevin Hart called you.
Right. April the white Fools, guy. Nigga.
Right. On April Fool's Day. And was like, yeah, go call Ralph and tell him he's in. Like, I didn't even apply. You know what I'm saying? I didn't even know that they were doing the show. I didn't know that Kevin and them were coming. I didn't know that they had been scouting. I didn't know any of this shit. Right. Now, mind you, if I had to check my email, I found out all this shit, but I didn't. And the dude tells me to call this other cat if I think he's lying. Of course I think you're lying. I call the other cat, and he basically tells me, yeah, we're going to do this shit called Heart of the City. One of the first cities we're stopping through is Washington, D.C. And Kevin's people definitely want you to host that night.
Booyah. I remember Heart of the City, okay. Man.
Well, here we go. So I did not apply. I did not put my name in. I did not put my tape in. I didn't even know they were taping a motherfucking show. When this dude called to tell me that, you know, they want me to host, my first thought was like, well, how do they know who the fuck I am? Like, you know, I don't go to your room. And apparently you have been dangling this shit over people for months. I don't even fuck with you. So how would I know that, you know, whatever is going on? And like the 3 or 4 days, man, my mind was racing. Like I couldn't figure it out. And then finally I just bucked up and called Pookie. And, you know, I was like, look, man, this seems to be like easily the biggest break I've had in my comedy career thus far. You know, the possibility of this doing something for me is huge. And, you know, I don't know how I got it. So, this is the message I love. I say, if you have something to do with this, this is my way of calling and saying thank you. And, you know, I appreciate you having the faith in me to, you know, put me in a position to do blah, blah, blah. And dude called me back and he says, hey, you remember that night I came to your room? I said, yep. He was like, that night is the night that we came up with Heart of the City. And he said, I knew that no matter what, we were going to end up taping an episode in Washington, D.C. And he said, I made a promise to myself that night that whenever we taped that room in D.C., you were going to be the one to host. Thank you.
Right.
What else can I say?
Hell,
you know what I mean? Like, thank you. I made the mistake of, you know, like everybody else, thinking like my whole world was going to change. I'm about to host some show. I'm about to be on Comedy Central, dog. Like,
right. This is it.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I bet a movie
this is it.
Week.
You know what I'm saying? Man, if you, you're right. If you, so I, you know, I'm calling my cousins. I'm calling my people. After the taping went down, you know, all of them, all of the Paper Cut Boys, the Red Cut Boys was there. Joy Wells was the program, the floor manager, actually, for the show. And he, you know, he hyped me up. He told me, he was like, yo, if you do a good job, you'd probably be one of the few hosts that we let end up staying on the show. You know, right. We'll let you do your thing. Da, 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 da. They told me some real specific instructions, and I followed all the instructions. It was a time thing. I did everything they asked me to do. I did a great job. I got a great rousing set of applause at the end of the night from everybody for hosting. And I honestly thought my life was going to change. And it just so happened that it was, I wound up going to Morehouse's homecoming. And one of the things that tends to happen to me is I hate sitting around bougie ass niggas that want to talk about their corporate exploits and how hard it is living their fucking corporate life. I really get mad about that shit. Like, I just right. don't like it. And so these niggas is talking, you know, yeah, you know, it's after my third year at Harvard and I finally took this job with CKPMG, I looked at the 501ks. And, Ralph, what are you doing? I sell crack to kids and I do comedy. Fuck you. Look, matter of fact, a nigga about to be on Comedy Central this motherfucking fall. All this 501k bullshit you talking, nigga. I just did a show with Kevin fucking Hart. I'm about to be on Comedy Central, nigga. And I might have been drunk. So, like, at this point, I'm mouth of flapping. I'm on Comedy Central. And when the show comes on, and you can watch it yourself and see it, first season, Washington, D.C. show, I am literally in every shot in the back. Because I, even the way it all came about, I wasn't trying to be presumptuous. I just knew I was hosting the show. Mm-hmm. I could have sat in when they did the round table and talked to the comics from the area, mm-hmm. but I chose not to because I was like, that's not what I was selected for. So, right. You know, humble to a fucking fault. So if you watch the show, the first comic that goes up is a guy by the name of Jamel Johnson. When Jamel finishes his set and walks off the screen, you will see me for all of 0.3 and a half seconds passing the mic as they feed the commercial. And when the show first debuted, my wife's father had died. And we had literally put him in the ground the day before the show was supposed to premiere. And, you know, my wife knew I didn't really want to watch that first show at her mama's house post the funeral and all the other shit. So we hustled back to Virginia to go and watch the show. Watch the whole show, come in just as it's starting. I keep thinking, all right, maybe they'll show me here, commercial. All right, maybe they'll show me here, commercial. Maybe they show me here, another commercial. Maybe they show me here, wrapping up the show, turn the show off. I'm literally sitting in my little den, tears just streaming down my fucking face, Rod. All right. I was hurt, man. And then my wife, because she's the shit, decides to run through and watch the show again. And that's when she noticed during the first commercial break that you saw me walk across the screen to go and introduce the next comic. And full circle, it taught me a powerful lesson, man. Like, it should have me really fucked up for a while. I didn't want to host shows. I didn't want to host nobody's show.
That bruised ego, you know, and that sadness, buddy. It ain't no joke.
Son, bro. Yo, I ain't want to host nobody's shows after Captain Target City Camp. I ain't hosting shit. Either you let me feature or you let me headline and you can kiss my monkey ass. I ain't hosting shit. I was on my shit. You hear me? I was like, fuck. No, not.
I'm the talent, nigga.
I am the motherfucker. You ain't cutting me out. And I felt like I couldn't show my face back at Morehouse worth a damn because I done told all these old uppity ass niggas that I'm trying to go chest to chest with and I'm supposed to be on Comedy Central and, you know, it ain't work out like that. So, like, this is probably the best way to end this. It's the truth, man. Like I said, when I started this shit with Roy, man, I was a listener, right? Like, I didn't know you worth a damn, man. I was just a fan of you. Like,
right.
Comic, man. I started comic before you, and it was just like, yo, man, I'm trying to do what that nigga's doing. Like, when I was listening to you on the podcast, it was like, I want to do that shit. I want to go back and forth with this motherfucker Roy, man, because I like this nigga on motherfucking Comedy Central. I want to go back and forth with the thing like nigga Rod doing.
Right.
Like, that was really how I felt, man. Like, highest amount of respect to you, you know what I'm saying? Because right. That's really how I felt, you know what I mean? I was like, yo, I'm that nigga funny. I want to fuck with that nigga and that nigga. They funny. That's just dope. But, you know, I'm sitting up here in New Jersey cutting the grass, my dude. Like, I'm... Right. You know what I'm saying? I'm not beating down stages and shit because it's COVID and shit, nigga. I'm up here beating down these kids and trying to raise this life right, man. I ain't seen a stage in at least a good year or so, man. So, like, you know, when I initially... I'm trying to do this without tearing up because I feel it already. When I initially interviewed for the job fair, they wanted me to be the guest booker and the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm cool with that. Like, yeah, shit, hell yeah. Like, y'all need somebody who can book guests. That's what I did professionally for years. And
right.
Y'all need somebody who can produce, man. I can produce radio with my eyes closed. I got an audition on my computer right now. Like, I'm really, really good with that. So that's what y'all want me to do. Yeah, man, I'm in. And that first week they taped, Roy asked me my notes. You had just walked off. You had just hung up, actually. Roy had asked me my notes. And he says, yeah, man, you know, I wanted you to take notes and get a real good feel for the show. Because when you start co-hosting this shit, you know, I'm gonna need you to understand how it goes. And I was like, fuck you just say? He goes, oh, they didn't tell you? They? Who the fuck are we talking about? They who? No, they did not tell me shit. Like, oh, yeah, man, you gonna be the new co-host for the show.
Right. Out of nowhere.
Me, nigga? Okay. All right, nigga, sure, whatever. Instantly, all of the, as they like to use that word, trigger, all the feelings that I had when the Kevin shit was going down started up again. And my first thought was like, man, I ain't saying shit to nobody, B. Right. I ain't telling nobody shit. I ain't saying motherfucking word.
Lesson learned. Okay.
I ain't saying I'm a co-host, a producer, a booker. I ain't saying I'm shit. Like, to the point that my wife, we was out with folks, and my wife was like, you need to tell people what you do. I ain't telling people shit. Fuck you, tell them. You so proud of me, you tell them, because I'm feeling it. I ain't saying shit. And so that Wednesday when the show came out, other than my my cousin, who was literally my best friend, has been for life, Jason Demery, just so you get that shout. That's my cousin. That's my dude. And then my man, who was in my wedding, my man Brandon Dozier. Those are the only two people that I spoke to. Like, I was nervous about the interview. I was nervous about all of this shit, man. Like, all of it. Like, honestly, scared to my fucking soul. Like, I was like, I've been through interviews before. I had an interview not too long ago to work for Newsy. Mm-hmm. And lost a job to a white girl who was an African-American studies major from Penn State after they done told me in the interview that they looking for diversity. You hire a white girl with an African-American degree from Penn State over the black guy.
Well, I mean, that is diverse. We don't have a lot of white people here with African-American studies degrees.
She was the first African-American, the first white girl I ever met with an African studies degree. I was like, where's her Dashiki at, bitch? Like,
you gotta be careful with the word diversity. Like, diversity doesn't mean more minorities. It means...
Diversity.
It literally means diverse. It's like, she's a white girl with an American American studies degree. It's super diverse.
Yeah, it's just super diverse. Super diverse, bro. So, like, yeah, man. When he said something about co-hosting, when he said any of that shit, man, like, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't say anything. As the paperwork started to come through and I had to fill out the shit so you get paid, you know, it hit another level of reality. Like, this shit's real. And then the night before, that Tuesday night before the podcast was supposed to go live, Roy basically was on me about listening to it. Like, you need to really listen to it. And I was like, you and JG went through it, man, and y'all wrote notes. I read y'all notes. I read what y'all said. I'm good. Like, y'all all right with it? I'm all right with it. I'm just happy to be here, coach. Like, I'm not... I'm just happy to be here, boss. You know what I'm saying? I'm about that action. I ain't even tripping. And he was like, nah, you really need to listen to it. And I listened to it, and... yeah, it kind of had me fucked up, B. Like, I realized that I had never really spoken about that kind of shit like that. You know, I also realized the gravity of the audience that I was about to cover and hit. And then it also hit me about, like, how many people were going to listen to this shit that know me for real. And I didn't say nothing to them. Didn't tell them that I was doing it. Didn't tell them that I had been working with them. Didn't say anything. Nothing. Like, I had said nothing. And, you know, I right, wrong, or indifferent. After I listened to it, I sent text messages to JG and Roy, and I was impressed that they could not see the tears in my text messages of, like, you know, just pure, like, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. Thank you so much for, you know, believing in a brother and giving him a chance. All of that shit, man. Like, all that. I mean that. Like, I, you know, I'm not just saying it for the cast, so it's because it's you, man. Like, you know, I mean that shit, man. And, you know, from the Kevin experience, it was a real serious thing for me, man. Like, it should really fuck me up.
Right.
And this time I ain't say nothing, man. And, like, I don't know, it probably gone. It had to be, like, it started at like 9 where one of my partners called me, man. That nigga said, hey, man, are we cool? I was like, yeah, man, why would you just come at me like that? What the fuck are you talking about? Why are we? Yeah, of course we cool. So you gonna do a podcast with Roy Wood Jr. and you ain't gonna tell me? I'm sitting up here on the treadmill at work and I hear your voice and you start talking about whatever, and this is how I find out? This is how you do me? I thought we was cool, dog. Like, you supposed to, like, I can't even, what the fuck? And that was the first call. And then, like, I didn't even post it, man. I didn't even post it, bro. My wife posted it. And my wife posted it, man. Then it all just fucking started, dude. And, like, I'm trying to hold myself together like a motherfucker, man. But, like, I tell people, man, for, like, 3 days, I was just a big-ass ball of tears and happiness, man. Like, it means so much. It means so much. It's still hard for me to even imagine, like, it's so, and I know it's not, like, the end-all, be-all, man. Right. You know what I mean? But, like, it's something. It means something, man. Right. Yeah, I ain't got no plans on fucking that shit up no time soon, so. Like, yeah, man, I'm blessed, man. That's the easiest way to put it, man. I'm just blessed, man. I'm happy as shit. Even if you're talking to you doing a podcast like I'm doing, man, I tell him, man, I'm just happy. I'm heads over the moon, man. I ain't even performed in none of the rooms I really want to hit, like The Stand, The Carolines, none of that kind of shit. But, you know, and when I do, it'll be fucking great. But, yeah, man, just it just means a lot. It means a lot. I'd be a lie to say it did.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
I mean, that's dope, man. I mean, that's a beautiful thing, man. That's awesome, you know? Like, everybody, especially when you're working in entertainment, man, like, there's a lot of letdowns in this shit. So you gotta really keep yourself grounded and steeped in reality. Because, like, one of the weirdest things about comedy is that, like, comedy is one of the most accessible things to people, but if you're not in comedy, you have no idea how the shit works. And, no. Like, we talk, like, me and other comics talk all the time, man, about how, like, when you tell people that you're doing comedy now, like, the first thing they start talking about is, like, so, like, you know, when you gonna get hired at SNL? When you gonna be on the Tonight Show? Shit like that, you know? Like, let me know when you at the comedy club, man, and I come. And it's just like, bro, it does not work like that. Like, I'm not just going to fail myself doing comedy. And then just send this shit to Lorne Michaels and the niggas who own the comedy store and shit. And they'll be like, yeah, well, you headlining this weekend.
They're just sitting there waiting for your shit. Right. They're like, yeah, they're just waiting on you. Like, I tell people, I used to have to try and check people back in D.C. because people would really think that, you know, this D.C. scene ain't shit. I'm just going to go on up to New York and get it cracking because I'm bigger than D.C. I'm just ready to go.
Right.
I used to tell motherfuckers, bro, if you can't kill shit in D.C., I don't really know what the fuck you think is going to happen when you go to New York.
Man.
And just so you get it, you guys know, not you specifically, but just so people would know, I'll tell them, like, you do realize that whenever you see somebody at the comedy store, they just don't walk in.
Right.
In order to perform at a comedy store, you have to have a national booker. You have to have an agent. You have to have at least 2 television appearances.
Right.
And then you still got to have, like, somebody, I think, and I still think you just got to have two comics that are native to the cellar vouch for you.
Right.
Like, you just can't roll up in there. You got to pay the dues.
Exactly.
Big you gotta pay the dues.
Yeah. But yeah, man, you gotta pay them fucking dues, man. Like, they really don't understand that shit, bro. Like, people don't understand how hard you gotta ingratiate yourself into a comedy scene, into those places. Like, they don't understand that if you was to say, I'm too big for DC, you know, I've been doing comedy for 2 weeks, but I need to get out of here and really get into it. So I'm moving to New York or LA, like, you about to go up there, and you go to one of them comedy clubs, and they're going to have your ass parking fucking cars. You know what I'm saying?
Believe that shit.
They're going to have your ass taking tickets at the door. Like, you got to work your way up to that. You can't even just go in that bitch and go straight into an open mic. You know what I'm saying? You got to be like, hey.
You're right.
I'm so-and-so. I just moved here from D.C. I want to do comedy. What can I do? And they'd be like, would you want to clean this fucking toilet 7 days
right.
a week?
You can clean this toilet. You can
do that.
You can clean the toilet.
And
you can actually suck all the alcohol out of the catch pans while you're here. Oh, yeah, it'll totally make you funnier. Like, right. And they'll tell you, you know, this dumb shit like that. Like,
they turn you into an intern.
Bruh. Well, there's that, and then there's the other one, which I'm sure you've run across, too, where at this stage in life, and when I was choosing to work regular-ass jobs, too, I would not tell people that I was a comic.
Right.
And the reason that I didn't tell people I was a comic, because there's always that one son of a bitch in the office that wants to try and out-funny you.
Right.
Or to try and tell you, hey, man, I came up with something that you could use in your routine. No, you didn't. Keep that shit. Don't do that shit. And always the motherfucker that wants to try and out-funny you is normally like a boss. It's always somebody in charge of you that everybody else is laughing at their bullshit anyway. And then they say the joke to you, and you just look at them.
You also just don't want to become known as the fucking office comedian in a professional sense. Like, you could be the office funny man or funny woman and, like, just be an accountant. But once everybody in there knows your ass actually goes out to do stand-up, now they're trying to come to shows. In addition to asking you to tell jokes, looking to you to always be the funny person, looking to give you hints or, you know, give you some tips for what to use. And then what if that shit flame out? I had a comic, my man Mark Anunson. Shout out to Mark Anunson, man. One of the funniest comics going up in Nashville. And Mark, he told me when I had him on the show, was talking about when he first started, you know, there was like a years long gap in his comedy career because he started doing comedy. Everybody at his job found out he did comedy like 2 times and then did do it for like 4 years. But for the rest of those 4 years, he was the office fucking comedian. And they just, where's your next show? You know, you guys know Mark does comedy. Every time somebody new started working there, every time he was at a meeting with somebody from somewhere else, you know, Mark's a comedian. He's like, I haven't done comedy in 2 fucking years. Like, I'm not no damn, please stop introducing me like that.
Please stop treating me like that. Like, yeah, no, I was a guard. I was a security guard. At a fucking boutique. You'll see me wear their clothes every once in a while. My man, shout out Major in D.C., my man Ducky U. I came home. I was on my way home one night from playing basketball, and I was all sweaty, and my, you know, I had on my ripped shoulder clothes and my socks and shit, and we stopped by Major because I saw him leaving the store. But I looked horrible. And he was like, dude, you look like that. You can work security. So, I mean, let me get this right. You want me to go play basketball and then come and stand in front of your shop for 6 hours as security? He was like, I wouldn't fuck with you when you look like that. And I was like, all right, well, fuck it, sure. So, next thing I know, I'm working security at this fucking store. But every time somebody famous, and Major is one of them stores in D.C. where, like, athletes walk through, famous people walk through, like, shit, one weekend I look up, I went and bought a fucking hat one weekend that I've been waiting for them to drop. And then they were like, yeah, man. Bun B just bought that same hat, and I turn around and motherfucking Bun is standing right there. And it's Bun B, nigga. Bun B. Like, holy shit, it's Bun. They had my hat, too. Wear that shit in the fucking video. One day we were in there, and I ain't even going into all of it, but, like, you know, it's annoying. They kept telling people, oh, yeah, he's a comic. So one day they were like, yeah, man. Yeah, wait till this guy comes by the store, bro. You're gonna have a trip. You're gonna ball out. You're gonna bug out. So this dude comes in the store. He looked Indian, but he had 2 huge-ass security guards. And I was like, yo, who the fuck is this dude? And so he looks at a couple shirts. He asked me a couple questions about the apparel. I'm still a bit of a sneaker and gearhead. Right. I'll never doubt that. And you know, I show him a couple shirts that I thought was dope. He bought one of the shirts. It was a shirt that had Red Fox. Come on, bro. Red Fox, Robin Harris, Moms Mabley, and I want to say Pygmy Markham. And it looked like they were on a mountain. And under it said Dead Funny. So it was like, you know, a Rushmore of black comics, but under it said Dead Funny. It was a dope shirt. And I wanted to buy the fucking shirt, as a matter of fact. But this dude decides that he's going to buy my fucking shirt. And I'm like, fuck. You know, I'm kind of mad by this. So when the dude goes up to the counter to buy the shirt, my man behind the counter starts bugging and shit. Like, I'm by the front door. I'm working, you know. Man is bugging. And he calls me, Ralph, you got to come in. Yo, that guy, Ralph, right there. You're my man, Ralph. He's a comedian, man. You need to talk to him. He's a comedian. And I was like, man, I ain't been on stage in like 3 months, nigga. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I've done comedy. All right? Fuck you. I've done comedy. How about that? I've done comedy. Please stop. And the dude turns around, man, and I felt like an asshole because it was fucking Russell Peters. And he starts talking to me about comedy, and he was like, you know, I got a show tonight. And I was like, I did not know you have a show tonight. And he was like, you know what? You're coming with me. You're going to my show. And I'm okay. And I ain't gonna lie, man. I felt like a bit of an asshole because as much as I think I'm a study of comedians, I didn't know who he was. Right. I didn't know who he was. And so like, in the brief time, yeah. And this dude is sitting up here throwing one-liners, and me and him are going back and forth. Like, we were in front of the shop for like a good 20 minutes. Might as well have done a set. Like, we were just going at each other. And it was fun, but I didn't on everything. I had no idea who the fuck he was. I had no idea who the fuck he was. So he tells me, you know, hey, look, man, I'm going to send my driver. Don't even worry about parking for your show tonight. And when he says that, that's when my ears perk up. What do you mean you're going to send your driver? The fuck your driver? Who the fuck is this guy? He sends the driver. Driver shows up at my little Edgewood apartment, fucking stretch-ass limo. I'm the only motherfucker in the limo. takes me over to GW, the Listener Auditorium, and it is filled. Listener Auditorium is about a 500-plus seat, like, venue. It's like a concert hall on the campus for George Washington University. It's a really nice, it's filled, it's packed. I've never seen this many Indian and Pakistani people in one place in my entire life. I don't even know what's going on. Like, I'm just like just shocked. Like, this is crazy. When I came in and Russell saw me, he had on a shirt. And then where I fuck up is he asked me, hey, man, you know, you want to do some time? No. Fuck no. Hell no, I don't want to do no time. I'm not going out there. Like, fuck that shit. I'm like, no. Hell no. Now I know, and I also tell this to all my other young comedians who may be listening. When a legend says, hey, you want some time, take that shit.
Every time.
Every time. Even if you motherfucking bomb, fall hard, but take the fucking time. Like, don't. I did not take the time. I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. And I sat there, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot. But just by watching him, he's a hell of a comedian. But from watching him, man, he's a hell of a comedian. Man, I just, to watch him work the crowd the way he worked, I mean, just for a good 2 hour set, brother, like, it was just so fucking good and effortless. And I learned a lot that night, too. I learned a lot. And I took a lot of what I learned and tried to apply it when I you know, started pushing on. But that's you know, that's the kind of shit it was, where it's like I fell into some shit and didn't know what I had fallen into. And cats would be like, oh, yeah, he's a comic. He's a comedian. And you'd be like, all right, could you stop? Please stop telling everybody. Just I get it. I appreciate the fact that you even think I'm fucking funny, but just don't. I mean, like, just
don't put that pressure on. Don't put me out like
that. Yeah, come on, bro. Like that. Because, like, you know, like, you, when people put that shit on you, man, you only really get to come out of that one or two ways. Either you either come out of that swimming or you come out of that sinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's a real sink or swim situation. It's just like, okay, you know what I mean? Told me you're the comedian. So now they are, first of all, they already expecting you. They expecting you to swim like a motherfucker. Like, they hoping you swim, because if you don't, it's just like, don't ever tell them to stop doing comedy. Like, don't ever do comedy again. You suck.
For years, and I figure you've been doing it long enough, so you got the same issue, man. I've done comedy enough now where even when it comes to my homeboys, man, just don't lie to me. If my shit ain't funny, or if I'd have asked you to listen to some shit and you don't get it, or you think it's bullshit, man, just tell me. All right. I am confident enough as a funny motherfucker that I'm going to say some shit that's not going to work. And I'm cool. But if I'm asking you as my fucking peoples, hey, is this shit decent? Don't be like, oh, yeah, man, that shit real. Yo, that shit funny, man. I dig that. No. No, I need you to say, nah, nigga, nah, you missed that.
Right. You know what's funny? I don't experience that. I don't ever ask people if something is funny because the secret to my comedy is that I do comedy because it's fun for me. I don't do comedy for anybody else. I don't do comedy for the audience. Doing comedy is something that I enjoy. So when I'm on stage, who I'm actually trying to make laugh is me.
No, I'm with you. I never ask people, hey, do you think this is funny? I just make jokes that I think are funny. And so I go on stage and just perform
for me. And if the audience laughs, that's great that they came with me. But if they don't laugh, like, I'm still going to have the time of my life because doing comedy is fun.
And with you, in that respect, we're on the same page. I'm the same way. I tell the crowd quick, look, I know I'm funny, so fuck you. Y'all are either going to like this shit or you're not. I don't give a fuck either way. I'm talking for 5 minutes and I got a check. So I don't give a fuck. You can take these jokes or you ain't got to take these jokes. But as any artist, right, as any artist is, at some point, you will show your stuff to somebody who might be a friend of yours, and you're not doing it for them. I'm not doing what I do for them. Mm-hmm. I get it. But, like, on the same tip, if I respect you enough to show you my material, then I'm going to need you to respect me enough to say that, yo, man, I ain't really get that.
Right.
Or, yo, man, I don't really understand where you come from. I know you're doing it for you, but I don't get I just need you to be honest with me. Like, don't lie to me. Don't set me up on the Apollo telling me I sound like Luther Vandross. You know what I'm saying? When I actually sound like Tom from Tom and Jerry, nigga. Like, don't set me up, bro. Like, I don't like that shit. Like, tell me, my nigga. Like, my boys in school, we used to have a rule, man. Like, if we going out on a Friday night, Thursday night, and we all got to meet up at the crib, and you show up in some old fuckboy outfit, hey, we going to let you know. We going to let you know before we all walk out the house, because I would much rather embarrass you as your friend than watch you go out in the street and somebody else embarrass the fuck out you and I can't say nothing to you. Man, so I'm going to embarrass the shit out of you in the house. You know what I'm saying?
That's in line with me. Me and my friends have, there's only two rules in our friendship, and that is, one, don't judge me, and two, no coming out on the sly. And part two goes right into part one. Because what those things mean is, two is self-explanatory. Don't fucking, if you, like don't just let it slip that you sucking dick. Just tell us right off the bat.
Tell us before we walk in the room.
And then we can talk about it all day and night. But don't let us be talking about sex and then you just let it slip that you was doing something.
Last week when I was sucking a dick,
don't do that because if you do that, then you've already violated the first rule and have judged us to not be accepted of your gayness.
So
the rule, when you break the rules, then the rule is we can still be cool after this, or we cannot still be cool after this, but we're gonna have to fight because you broke the rules. Then after that fight, if you want to stay friends, that's fine. And that's if fine. You don't want to stay friends, that's fine. But we're going to fight. Because you judged me.
Oh, man.
And the biggest part of not judging me is that, like, feel however you want to feel about what I'm about to tell you. Mm-hmm. Please agree with it. Don't agree with it. Tell me it's awesome. Tell me it's fucked up. But I better be able to tell you anything. Don't fucking judge me. I better be able to come to you with anything. And you can feel how you want to feel about it. But... Don't ever tell me I can't talk to you. That's my motherfucker cut off right there. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I need to be able to tell you this shit.
I don't need you to tell me about it. I already been done it. Yeah. So I just need you to shut the fuck up and listen and shit. I don't need you to play devil's advocate.
Don't fucking judge.
I'm good, man. That's something me and my wife talk about all the time, man. Like, I don't like anybody playing devil's advocate, because the way I look at it, the devil didn't need nobody to convince him to do shit.
Right.
All
right.
So he don't need you to sit back here and play the app. What would happen if I don't need your fucking help? Yeah. This is what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, let me tell you what's up, man. And then you tell me how you feel about it. But don't tell me I can't talk to you about it. That's judgment. Don't do that. Don't fucking do that. Tell me what I'm about. Tell me what I told you is the most fucked up shit you ever heard afterwards. But don't stop me from telling you. That's judgment. I don't like it. You can't. We can't be friends if I got to keep things from you. And vice versa.
No,
if you keep things from me, like or whether you want me to keep things from you, that's the type of judgment we can't get down with in this friendship.
Man, trying to tell you. I might as well be that nigga on Billy eating a banana, nigga. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm saying. Like it. And you know what?
That, I don't like it.
And to go back to what you said about the Russell Peters thing, before I let you get out of here, it reminded me of the thing about if a legend asks you to do something, always take that time. It reminds me of in college, we built a new student activity center, and one of our friends was over like the student section of like events and shit. He was the president of that. So we had a Petey Pablo concert. Now, this is when Pete Dog was on the downswing. This is when Petey was on the downswing. This is when he had signed the death row. You know what I'm saying? He was, my man was down bad.
Dark days.
He was down bad after Come On and Raise Up and after Goodies with Sierra. Your boy fell off and he ended up signing with death row. But so we had a Petey Pablo concert to open the Student Activity Center. And of course, the homie put us all on the payroll. We all worked security and drove and shit like that for it. So one of our homies had to go up to Birmingham, pick Petey up, bring him down to the show. And then afterwards, he had to take him back to the ham. So this nigga leaves to take Petey back to Birmingham. And when he comes back, he tells us this story where we're all like, what the fuck is wrong with you? So what happened was he drove Petey back to Birmingham. And then Petey had his drivers and shit meet him at a strip club. So my boy had to take Petey to the strip club. And when they get there, Pablo asked this nigga if he wants to come in and party with him. You know what I'm saying? He could have spent the night drinking, smoking, hanging out. With a rap, I won't say superstar at the time, but a dude who had superstar status and still some cachet. And this nigga said, I can't. I got to bring the van. I got to have the van back by like 1 a.m. or some shit like that.
And we
sitting there like, nigga, we're all the people over when the van. We done just lied. we done just signed you in at midnight, and you could have came back to 2 days later, you dumb motherfucker. I'm like, bro, you missed a chance to party with Petey Pablo. Because the van had to be back at 1 o'clock. I was like, nigga, you the dumbest motherfucker alive, dog.
see, yeah, you can't fuck up opportunities like that, man. Like,
I'm gonna tell the legend, though.
Look, I'm gonna tell you like this, bro. Another time, another date, without burying the headline, I'm gonna put it like this. I smoked out Morehouse's King Chapel with George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. Because when I listened to Funkadelic as a kid, I didn't know that they was talking all that shit while they was doing drugs. I just thought they were making funky ass music, and I just liked the funky ass music. I didn't know any of that shit. And then I go off to college and I start smoking weed. And I was like, holy shit, they've been talking about weed the whole time. This dude is going to my campus. I got to meet him. It's George fucking Clinton. I got to meet him. It's a involved story, which I'm not going to tell you now for a lot of reasons. But more important, the most important part is when it came time for it, this is the only part you need to know. When it comes time to it, I have figured out a way to be the guy who is in charge of George Clinton's dressing room. I watch all of the administrative type for the school go away. They did not know that I stashed a small pipe, a small like bullet pipe.
A little one-hitter?
Yeah, the little one-hitter bullet pipe. I stashed that in my pocket And then I went to the homie that I knew in Atlanta that had the best weed I knew of at the time. Because I was just no way I could go to George Clinton with the Project Roach raid sacks and shit. I wasn't going to do that and shit. So I went to the homie and got a nice ass sack. And as soon as everybody rolled off, and this is true as fuck, swear for God, they stabbed me. I don't give a fuck. This shit happened. It was one of my greatest moments in college. I turned around, I watched them walk off. Close the door, I go in, I say, excuse me, Mr. Clinton, can I speak to you, sir? And, like, the whole band is there. Everybody's in this room and shit, right next to the stage. And it's like a green room. And I say, Mr. Clinton, how you doing, sir? My name is Ralph Mills Cooper III. I'm from Springfield, Virginia. And I've been a great, great fan of your music. Matter of fact, when you did your concert on January 4th, 1994, at Constitution Hall, sir, I was there in the balcony, and she was the first concert I ever went to. You know, and I'm just such a fan of your music. And when I was listening to your music initially, sir, I didn't understand it, but then I came to college and I started smoking, and I listened to it again, and it just hit me a whole other way. And I really just wanted to say, shit. And I reached in my pocket and I grabbed a bullet pipe and a weed, and I put it in his hand, and I shook his hand, and I was like, thank you, Mr. Clinton. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Clinton. And he looks at me. And he looks in his hand, and he goes, oh, young brother, are you trying to smoke? And I was like, well, you know, I mean, I don't know if we could do that here, but yeah, I'm definitely trying to smoke. And George goes, oh, well, why didn't you just say so? And the whole band breaks out fucking joints, blunts, pipes, coke, heroin, everything right there. Like, right there, like just boom, the whole room went from like smelling sanitized to being so choked out, like it was crazy. And then he takes my pipe and smokes my little weed. And, man, this is some good shit, little brother. So where are you from? And just starts talking to me about school and like has this whole conversation with me about being in college and, you know, making sure I take advantage of my opportunities. And, you know, I was telling him I was going to the radio station. And he was like, stick with it, young brother. You know, you got a great voice for radio. Da, 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 da. We there for like 10, 15 minutes. The room is danked out, bro.
Danked out, bro.
And he looks at me and he goes, well, cool. It's been cool, little brother, but, you know, we got some band shit to take care of, so I'm going to need you to go and stand outside, you know, and do business. I'm high, right? And I'm still getting used to getting high at this point. This is not like professional level high that we are now. This is, I'm paranoid. I'm still at that level. And so
how do you ever
I'm
be?
Thinking to myself, bruh, I was so lit. And he goes, hey man, we're gonna need you to stand outside, so don't get upset. But we, you know, just remember, you know, I'm looking out for you, man. Man, this is the greatest moment of my life, Mr. Clinton. You can do whatever you need to do, sir. I'm good. He opens the door and Rod, he goes, God damn it, Cooper, you don't tell me what the fuck I can and can't do. I am George motherfucking Clinton. I am P-Funk. I smoke where I want to motherfucking smoke. I shake my leg. I pee where I want to goddamn pee. Don't you tell me shit. And then the admins start rushing around, right? Like the administrative folks. Like the president of the school, all these motherfuckers. Cooper, what did you do? I was like, I told Mr. Clinton that he couldn't smoke in King Chapel. It's King Chapel. And he goes, I told that motherfucker I could do what the fuck I want to. I'm George goddamn Clinton. And he pulls the president and a couple other people in this room. And as he pulls them in the room, he comes back, he looks at me, he kind of winks, kind of, you know, walks up. And as soon as he closes the door, man, like my legs damn near collapse. Oh my God. What just happened? Holy shit. What just happened? Oh my God. What just happened? And like, it was the best concert. It was George Clinton, a young unknown singer by the name of fucking Maxwell, Groove Theory, and UBU, a group that nobody ever heard of again. And the headliner was the fucking Fugees.
Hell yeah.
Lauryn Hill, Square Club. It was the greatest fucking show, but I smoked out King Chapel, bitches. I did that shit. I smoked out King Chapel like I'm Bill and Ted or motherfucking Silent Bob and Ray J. I smoked that bitch out.
Like the addict of the top two students of your high school.
It's all full circle, son.
Hell yeah.
Going hard.
Man, I appreciate you coming on the show, Big Dog, man, and share your stories and share it all the love, man. Much love back to you, man. Glad you came on my show. Glad to have you on the job fair, man. And look forward to meeting you in person and continuing to work with you, bro. And hopefully we can share a stage soon and all that jazz, man. And we'll definitely be sure to get you a part two on the Story Corner, because there's a lot more to talk about.
Oh, man, yeah. Now, we ain't even get to talk about going out on a blind date with Kobe's sister and shit. That's a whole nother...
Right.
A whole nother motherfucker
and,
right there.
And your vicious beefs. Your vicious... I've noticed that in the stories you told today that... you're a nigga that will harbor some anger, and you will get angry, and you and motherfuckers will just fall the whole fuck out forever.
I am Richard Petty's dark shadow. I have no problem admitting that when I go to some Chinese restaurants, I order Petty Guy Pan. I am Petty when I don't need to be. I have a shirt. My wife has it too. We both got a shirt that says I'm black, I'm educated, and I'm petty. All right. So like I've even stopped trying to argue about it at this point. But I think I've gotten a lot better as I become an adult. But no, yeah, I can be in the petty gold medal Olympics. I can be petty as fuck. So yeah, but you gotta be sometimes, man. You just gotta be. It's too easy to let shit slide. You know, sometimes you just gotta push that limit, man. So yeah, I gladly will come back on, man. For real, I know I've said it a number of times, but I'd say it again. I was a fan before I ever met you, my friend. Yeah, man. From the word go, every time I'd have heard your ass, man, this motherfucker right here is a wild boy.
Very much appreciated.
I've already decided, you know what I'm saying, take care of this Japanese whiskey and this drunk squirrel shit. And now, you know what I'm saying, we have to, you know, it's legal here in New Jersey, Rod. I know you in a different state, but we might have to get you up here in New Jersey where things are legal. So.
Let's rock.
Yeah, I'm with it, man. I'm with it. You figure out a way to get me down there, I will damn sure come. And as soon as somebody trusts me enough to book a room in the New York, New Jersey area, know you're getting a call, sir. So,
hell yeah.
That's the way it's got to work. I'm all for it.
Bet that up, man.
And if you do go to D.C., like real talk, and I mean this, you go to D.C. and you don't let me know you're going to D.C., we going to have a problem.
Yeah, I'll be sure to hit you up, man.
That's the crib, bro.
I've been to DMV, man. I want to see the porn stash. I want to see your pop's ancient porn collection.
Hell, shit!
Like, I want to see the Holy of Holies. I know y'all got them old blacktails. Ark of the Covenant. I want to open that motherfucker up.
That's what we gotta be real shady. I gotta like send the kids first, and my mama just leave. Get my dad some cognac so this dude will open up. Dude. Yeah, like
send moms, you know, out for a spa day with the wife.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Spa day.
Real quick. Of course, I paid for it, mom. You good, mom? Nah, you go ahead. Yeah, you good? Tell him I sent you. You go ahead. You good, mom? Yeah. I'm all for it, bro.
Bet that up, man. Well, shit, I'll get at you later, Big Dog.
Man, that's what's up, man. Anytime, man.
Well, there you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you laughed. I hope you smiled. I hope you learned something. Hope it put you in a good mood. If you're already in a good mood, hope it put you in a better mood. Had a lot of fun. Big shout out to all my guests and telling some great stories. It's a real good time, man. Anyway, check back in with us soon. We'll have an all new episode going. I want you to know I love you, and I hope you love yourself and love everybody else. The number to the National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. 1-877-273-8255. The number to the Trans Lifeline is 1-877-565-8860. Hit them up if you need to talk about some things or something's troubling you. Hell, hit me up. I don't really sleep until the sun comes up like a vampire. So hit your boy up, man. If you got my number, call me. You know, when you need to talk, text me. Hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on Facebook, hit me up on Instagram, whatever. You can email me at rodforshort@gmail.com. And if you're feeling generous, hit your boy with a donation on the Cash App. That's #, $, Rod for Short, R-O-D, number 4, S-H-O-R-T. Hit me up on Venmo at Narado Moore. And I think that'll do it, man. Holla at you.